with special interviews on the shelter crisis, the upcoming city council meeting on December 8th, hopefully around the sleeping ban, and protests galore in Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, and around the globe.
We're here at Noah's Bagelry about, 10:30 or so? We're talking to
Frank Ross.
And Frank, you're a prisoner of California.
Yes, sir.
In fact, you're a prisoner of Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz.
For at least 30-some days.
Why is that?
Because I got another ticket yesterday.
Now, what were you doing? Perhaps beating up a woman with her child?
I was standing there, wasn't making a word, just standing there holding newspapers.
You were breaking windows of cars, right?
No, I wasn't. In fact, I've...
You were throwing petrol on homeless people and burning them up.
I might get away with that.
Were you again at Plymouth and Ocean Street?
No, not on Ocean. It's a block, about a half, quarter of a block away. It's Plymouth south of Grant. And I was staying in the same spot I was last Sunday that they gave me the ticket. And this one was a female California Highway Patrol on a motorcycle pulled up. My girlfriend was sitting there with her dog watching me sell papers. Uh-huh. And what happened is she pulled up and I go, well, the first thing that came out of my mouth was, oh no, not again. And she says, well, what do you mean? I says, well, I just got one last week. And she says, well, not like this one, you're not. And like she knew what was going on or something, so she gave me a ticket. She ran my license again from Florida, criticized why I'm here, because Florida's supposed to be warmer. And I says, no, it's not. I've been there. Have you? She goes, no. And I go, well, it's colder in Florida than it is here. And then she goes, is this your current address? And I says, no, I'm residentially challenged. And she says, cut the crap. You're not the political crap. She said, to quote her, she says, cut the political correctness crap. You're homeless. And I just looked at her, didn't say anything. I knew I better just keep my mouth shut. Because she asked me what I had done with my cigarette butt, and I said, I set it over here next to my bag. And she looked, and there it was, because I don't litter neither. I don't even litter cigarette butts. And because there's enough litter over there, I've cleaned up some of it where I was standing, because I don't want it to be,
frequent tactic used by police officers is to tell you to put out your cigarette, then give you a littering ticket when you do it on the ground.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what I figured she was going to do, but I set it right next to my pack. but she gave me the ticket. And that's what she proceeded to give me the ticket.
So now we've moved to a little incident happened here at Noah's Bagelry. To interrupt this, Frank, your brief story, we're talking to Frank Ross. But Becky Johnson, yeah, you're having a bagel here at Noah's Bagelry. What just happened?
One of the staff members came over and rather rudely insisted that the windows near the front of the street need to be open because she's hot as she's cooking back by hot ovens way in the back of the store. And I pointed out that it's 65 degrees out and we were quite cold and closed the windows for our own comfort. And I said, oh, so it's for the convenience of staff rather than the customers, huh? She was very rude.
And I guess there was a suggestion that because we are a somewhat hirsute, scruffy group.
Because we had a group of somewhat scruffy looking customers here that she felt that she could treat us that way with impunity.
I had a shower yesterday.
You showered yesterday and you were still given a ticket by this female California Highway Patrol officer. I have to hear more about this. Hang on. So continuing, Frank, I see you have this ticket here with you. It's a citation for November 5th, 3:15 in the afternoon, Frank C. Ross. You've given your address of Zephyrillis, Florida.
Zephyr Hills.
Yes.
That's what my license says.
Zephyr Hills. And the ticket is for 5.43.020B, Santa Cruz Municipal Code soliciting within 10 feet of an intersection selling newspapers.
And then I tried to write under duress right here, and she grabbed the book from me, and she says, if you don't want to go to jail, I suggest you sign your name. And I told her I was going to sign my name, but I wanted to let everybody know that I was being, this is under duress, that I'm signing
it. The proper practice to use with that is, you should ask the officer, if I decline to sign this ticket, will you take me to a magistrate, or will you take me to jail? If she then, or he then, says, I will take you to jail, then you can actually write under duress, or you can just sign the ticket, and the next day, as I was suggesting, go into the court and say, I want my signature rescinded because it was done under duress. I wasn't going to be given the opportunity to go to a magistrate.
She was looking for things to find to take me to jail. So I just tucked my tail in, put my panties on, and kissed her butt, man, like she wanted me to do.
You know what we can do? We can go down and slap her butt with a complaint to the CHP, if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love to. In fact, I was really actually going to do all this. I was going to do it with you or without you. I'm going to try to sue him for harassment or something.
Remember, this may go absolutely nowhere.
It
but
doesn't matter.
And it also may result in the CHP taking an increased interest in your activities.
Right.
You may get more tickets.
Right. Well, so, then that would be proof of harassment there.
If you have ever found an attorney with the interest in taking the case. Right. So don't mislead yourself as to where this may lead.
The only thing they can do to me is put me in jail for 30 days, fine. $1,000 fine for each offense, but hey, I get a free shower, free meals. Hey, I mean, it's better than being homeless on the streets.
Okay. I mean, I appreciate that attitude. You're a vulnerable person as a homeless person. Be aware of that.
Yeah,
I mean, they can, you know.
I've done time before anyways. You know, I mean, I could do that these days, staying on my nose, smile on them every day. You know, those are doing me as a favor, actually, you know. They got to clothe me. They can take care of my tooth. They can take care of my broken back. They can take care of my my artery is hardening because my arm goes numb on me all the time. Like, you know, they tell you you're supposed to have, but I don't like to say the word. But take care of me, man.
Thank you, Frank. Well, that's a possibility. We'll see what happens when we go into the CHP. Sorry, Frank, what were you saying?
The reason why I'm selling newspapers, my girlfriend's over here across the street. She's panhandling right now because she's been abused. And we both were both brought up abused. And we're just trying to make money to get bikes so we can get the hell out of this godforsaken state. It's the only reason why we're doing this. I mean, I could go and easily go steal me a bike. I've been in prison for stealing. I can go break into a house. I can rob somebody, bop them in the head. I've done that, been there. You know, that. I mean, and I never got caught. I mean, I could do that. But no, I wanted to do things legitimate. I got me a nice girl. I got a future somewhere ahead of me. It ain't in this for state. But right now I'm a prisoner for 30 days, I guess, at least. And I just want to make money so I can get the hell out of here the legal, most easy way I can.
Thank you. Well, I don't know what to say, Frank. It's very well put. That's all I can say that. So this isn't the first time you sold papers.
Oh, correct. I sold them in Arizona, Texas, and Florida. And I never had, never, except that time in Arizona where we all got that officer off the job for harassing us.
Tell us about that.
That was 1994-95 in Mason, Phoenix, Arizona. And this officer, Cottrell, was harassing all the homeless people selling newspapers. He would give us our tickets every day. And finally, some lawyer pulls up that we used to sell paper to, took our case, and we all filed our names on this class action lawsuit. And instead of us suing him, he took early medical retirement leave, and then we couldn't sue him because he was no longer a police officer anymore. So, but we got rid of him, though. You know, I mean, we had no other hassles. I mean, we made money. We all got our bikes. We traveled. And, you know, we didn't do any, we didn't, our money, we didn't spend our money on alcohol or drugs. But we was, you know, bought tobacco and stuff like that, but, you know.
Deadliest drug.
Yeah, you know, the debt, right, but it's legal at least. I'm doing everything legal according to my books. You know, I mean, I can't carry a law library around with me to know if I'm 10 feet or not. I don't have a ruler if I'm 10 feet or not, you know. At least give me a warning, you know, let me know before you ticket me, and I can bow my head and go. I mean, I'll go to the law library myself and look it up like I did about my camping. You know, I've been in that library, and I looked up about camping because I kept getting harassed where I was camping at here in Santa Cruz.
How long ago was this?
About 2 weeks ago. And now I know the laws. I got it written right on my tent, exemption number and everything.
Tell us about that.
Well, and it tells you where you can camp, where you can't camp, how long, and things like that. So one of the sections has an exemption. and I'm camping in Pogonip, by Pogonip Open Space Preserve, and it does mention this open space as an exemption. And I...
Have you actually been... You know if the police have seen your ticket and tent and...
Yeah, there's been rangers come by. They even complimented us on how nice and clean our camp was.
Because that's interesting. I've never heard of that. Like, you should perhaps let us know what that exemption is. I know there is an exemption outside the city, but Pogonip is inside the city limits. So that's an interesting exception to the camping ban, which I've never heard of. Perhaps you could get that to us. What's that? Outside the city, it's legal to camp or sleep almost anywhere except on private property with against the permission of the owner. There are four no camping zones that are very small. They're like, you know, three or four blocks, five or six blocks each. One is Pasatiempo, another is Tanner Heights, but none of them are really to the north or south. They're all kind of to the east. So mostly in the county. What?
I'm just past the sign on the side of the road.
It is legal for you to be there, but of course the deputies misinform people about this regularly. They'll harass you anyway. That's the problem. So
what I have it written on my tent, I have it one of the papers, and I got it written on there with magic marker, the code for camping and the exemption number and everything. And I haven't, no one's hassled us. We haven't got no red ticket. They haven't moved our stuff.
How long have you been there?
About 3 weeks.
Wow.
And they do mess with all the druggies, because I have to walk down there and go past where all the prostitutes and drug people hang out. And I go way past them, and I'm way at the northern, almost to the borderline of, but it's still within the city limits of their rules.
You know, anybody else has used your system?
Oh, no. In fact, I try not to tell anybody, because then, you know, then you're going to get riffraff, and you're going to get, you know, and I got me a woman out there, and we don't need any problems. You know, there are people who know we're there. A lot of locals walk by, and they don't, you know, we say hello to them. We keep our place clean. I take my garbage out daily. There's, you know, we have no problems. I have a stove out there, a lantern that I light every night, and everybody, you can't help but see it. Locals see me, like I said, every day, and I will say hello to them, I talk to them, and, you know, a lot of them say, well, I've lived here all my life, and it's a beautiful place, isn't it? I says, yes, sir, and, you know, I says, I like our camp, and he says, yeah, it's really nice, and he says, well, we're not going to be here long, but, you know, we just have no other place to go for right now, and
just don't sell newspapers, that's all.
Well, not in a forest.
Maybe heroin or cocaine would be a better and more profitable.
I tell you what, yeah, I've made a lot of money doing that. I never got busted in my life doing that. I got three felonies on my record, as it stands for now, but those are all for robberies, two robberies and burglaries, you know. But everything else I've done, I've never got caught for it. Okay. And I've made a lot more money than I am now. And I didn't have no police harassing me when I was selling drugs neither. But I haven't done drugs in 10 years, so, and I don't plan on going back to doing any drugs.
Well, maybe we could line up a couple of robberies for you.
Yeah, well, just because I sell drugs don't mean I gotta do them neither.
Thank you.
I need some of the policemen's kids.
Police don't need you to sell them. They confiscate them.
And they have their own supply.
I think you have some additions to add to this ticket you got yesterday from the California Highway Patrol.
Right, because before, there was three... California Highway Patrol officers that drove by me in their vehicles, and every time any officer goes by me, I always give them the peace sign, and not one of them even looked at me. They didn't care two hoots about me being there. But then when that female officer came up, I think she didn't like my t-shirt, because I got a t-shirt on that says I'm not a criminal, and I had my long hair. I just took a shower and everything, so I was letting my hair dry and all that, and then my girlfriend's black. And I think she just had
Did she know that you have any words to say to your girlfriend or your dog?
She told her she could sit there all she wanted, stay there. But she goes, no, I'm with him. Because she wanted me to leave. Because all I was doing was standing there holding papers. Yeah. She told me I had to leave. She leaned up against her motorcycle and waited for me to leave. And then she told my girlfriend, I can't mention her name because her husband, ex-husband, is a really bad beater. And she told her that she could stay there, but I had to leave.
Thanks, Frank. So Frank, you said you had a problem with the homeless, the free meal. What is that?
HRCS. Yeah. It's because there's the plastic spoons. Everybody, they got dirty hands. They dish right into it. They serve the food over the food. You're supposed to serve your food outside of the pot that it's being served into. People, it's just nasty. Every time I go there, I get sick. So I have not eaten there.
You actually gotten sick when you went there?
Yes, sir. Definitely got sick because of that place.
How many times?
Both times I went there to eat. So ever since I've stopped eating there, and I eat at my own camp now, my cold's going away. I don't feel sick. I don't puke. My stomach's okay and everything.
You associate that with the food at the Homeless Community Resource Center, the free meal?
Sure. Even our dog food has more meatier chunks than that food they had there last night even. It looked like dog food.
You were there? You didn't eat there last night? Or you?
No, I went there to take a shower yesterday, and I went to go steal some toilet paper out of there. That's about it. And I happened to notice what they were feeding yesterday. It was that rice and whatever that junk was. And I mean, I wouldn't even give it to my dog. A dog eats better than that out of a can.
And with us on the phone on Free Radio Santa Cruz, we have that man about the camping ban or the sleeping ban.
Thank you for that distinction.
That's David Silva. Hi, David.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
Good. What's cooking? You have a kind of a report for us from the downtown business man, Peter Eberle.
Oh, you found me out, Robert.
Indeed. I've been checking you out.
Yeah, well, I did meet with the director of the Downtown Association today. You know, it's to me very apparent that something is going to be done in terms of the sleeping ban and amending the camping ban and activities around camping ban. So the sleeping ban's involved. I wanted to, reach out business community and find out what their concerns are. If we're going to make this work, we do have to make it work together. So I went there to... Basically, I ended up just rattling on for an hour, mostly giving him course 101A on the sleeping ban, and he wasn't all that forth with himself, but I got a sense of what the concerns of the business people downtown are.
Now, tell us who Peter Eberle is.
He's the director of the Downtown Association.
And I know we heard from Catherine Byers yesterday that there were six different organizations. This is what she said. I'm not quite sure what she was referring to, that... Yeah. Business organization she wanted to kind of check things out with before making any changes in the sleeping or camping ban. Now then she later apparently changed that position later in the day, perhaps due to all the good phoning from all you radio people out there in radio land who want to end the sleeping ban. And by the way, should also pick up your phones right now and dial the city council at
429-3550. Hit the pound key.
You got it. Well, what did you learn from Peter? And you sound pretty upbeat here, David.
Well, I sound upbeat because I really got a sense that the man is resigned that the sleeping ban is going to go away. And he has concerns on how we can do this as a community. He also understood that, you know, this is, it has a long history in Santa Cruz. It has a history of perhaps that, you know, could really be pointed to some bad behavior on some homeless people. But we absolutely have to acknowledge that there's been bad behavior on the part of the police department, and that the sleeping ban has been the excuse for a lot of that bad behavior. So we kind of came to that mutual respect in each other's positions.
Now, can you clarify briefly for listeners who may not know the difference between the sleeping and the camping bans?
Well, within the camping ordinance, the very opening of the camping ordinance is a definition of camping. Section 1A and B. Section A says sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. And then it says in other words, in any condition, sleeping outside, out of doors. Sleeping out of doors is illegal because it's considered camping.
Even in a vehicle.
Even on public or private property, under a vehicle, with or without blankets or bedding or camping, you know, it's sleeping out of doors is illegal.
So sleeping itself is illegal.
Sleeping itself is illegal. And the same with Section B, covering up, you know, is considered camping. Even putting a blanket over your child's shoulders is considered camping. So I got that really, I think I got it really clear with him, and he understands that, you know, there is a human rights violation involved. And I got the sense that most of the businesses also do, but he did warn us that there's a hardcore of reactionary businessmen that are really going to fight this, and we can expect them to show up in pretty strong mass Tuesday at City Hall. And also that what they're doing is what I call fear-mongering by getting the other businesses to be afraid of people sleeping in front of the doorways, sleeping in the street, and also the magnet theory. So I think I pretty much convinced them that the magnet theory is bogus.
Now, what is the magnet theory?
Magnet theory is that, you know, if any one city anywhere in this fragile system of homeless population throughout the country or in the state of California, if any one city lifts its its homeless laws, any of its anti-homeless laws, or if any one of the cities provides too much social service, then all the homeless will run to that community. Well, that's bogus. It's been proven scientifically over and over again that that's not true. People do not move for those reasons. So I got him to really understand that, you know, that is a pretty much dismissed argument, even though it may be the argument that it may be the position of fear that a lot of shopkeepers have. You know, we can assure them with lots of previous research, lots of evidence. Congressman Sam Farr says that it's baloney. We can assure them that that's not the case.
But Mayor,
there may be a small percentage, say, of people that are no longer trespassing after the sleeping ban, and may be a little bit more visible, but it will not be a large visibility. They do not have to be afraid. This law is the police department's pet law. That's where the problem is.
Be more. Can you continue on?
Yeah, it's a pet law because it's a broad law that they can use indiscriminately, that they can use to harass people. It's a law that, you know, since an outlaw is something that no person without a house can help but do, and that's sleep. It means that they can pick and choose who they want to criminalize. Our Constitution is very clear that that's not the role of the police officer, that's not the role of law enforcement in this country, and it's very dangerous whether you're dealing with gypsies or whether you're dealing with the rainbow people, the new gypsies, that if you begin these kind of programs that you end up affecting a wider population for one thing, and the other thing is that basically once you start eroding the rights of any population that you don't like, you're going to erode the rights of all of us. And that's a basic argument in this country. It's one of our founding principles, and I think he got pretty clear that, you know, this, that we are about human rights, those of us that are involved in repealing the sleeping ban, and that we are quite willing to work, and we know that between now and February, when we expunge the sleeping ban, that we're going to have to sit down with these business people and assure them, much the same way that the drumming people got together and proved that self-regulation can work. They're going to have to meet real homeless people, because I had to give them about five case studies, so to speak, of the variety of homeless types situations, you know, and the things that homeless people have to do. You know, they have to have their sleeping equipment stored in one friend's house, and they're cooking stuff in one friend's house, and have to go somewhere else to use the kitchen, somewhere else to use the refrigerator. Then they have to walk clear across town because they're saving money, and end up missing a bus to go to a shelter that they may or may not have been qualified for. There's a lot of reality that these people have to understand. So we do have to come together as a community, and I really have high hopes that there's going to be some business people out there that have creative imagination, that remember the charm that Santa Cruz was before the earthquake and want to recapture that. So I think it's exciting. It's really challenging, and we need to do the work.
Thank you, David. Anything you want to conclude with?
Everybody show up Tuesday, whenever this item is going to be on the agenda.
Are you bringing your sleeping bag and your blanket there, David?
I'm going to have my blanket over my shoulder. Yeah, I think we need to continue to be symbolic and to the point, and people need to understand the cruelty of this law as we do away with it, as we phase it out. But we need to do it as a community, and I'm glad that the business community is coming on board, and we hope we can get the police community to come on board.
Thank you, David.
Sure thing.
And that was David Silva of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, reached before he dashes off to one of his innumerable meetings. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host with Civil Rights for the Poor, also known as Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre, and you can see my broadside if you're nice to me. To call us, you can reach 427, you can give a call to 427-3772. That's our studio line. We have an open line. We only have one line, so if you get a busy signal, just keep trying. You'll get through eventually. We are very deferential to callers in that we really appreciate your input. We see here at Free Radio our purpose, at least I see the purpose of my show, as providing a real forum in the community around important civil rights issues that are elsewhere given short shrift or ignored. To wit, the Metro, the Sentinel, the Good Times, the City Council. There's a lot of hoopla and self-congratulations and high hopes about the new City Council. David Silva, as you just heard, seems to be very positive, very upbeat. However, I've talked to other people who, though initially rather upbeat, are now not so upbeat. Particularly around this issue of the sleeping ban, because the minimum that most of us agreed was necessary for this council to take action before it recesses for the winter, and that'll be on Tuesday. Its last scheduled council meeting is Tuesday, December 8th. And it should have, on November 24th, put the sleeping ban on the agenda. Actually, the old council with Catherine Byers and Celia Scott should have put it on the agenda on the 17th. But the 24th, the new council could have put it on. It could have been put on the agenda by Byers, and the new council could then have begun the discussion process that would have allowed people to sleep this winter without fear of harassment, tickets, jails, fines, vehicle confiscations, and so forth. It is not yet as I am. It's not yet clear to me that that issue is on the agenda at all. This Tuesday, there is something going to be on the agenda. As I mentioned earlier, I spoke to Mayor Byers yesterday. She told me that first there wasn't going to be anything. Then later in the day, she said there was going to be something. And we're about to play, by the way, so stay tuned, a segment of a KUSP radio show. KZSC radio show last night. That's the university station on which council members Crone and Sugar. Boy, I need some coffee or something. Or maybe less coffee. We're talking about the sleeping ban last night on the air and about what they plan to put on the agenda. And we did try to get some input into that process this morning, some of us from the committee to repeal the sleeping ban. And I'm hoping to get a call from Becky Johnson, who is both my producer and an expert in her own right on shelter situations, having been a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless until she was kicked off by Karen Gillette and the Homeless Community Resource Center gang for apparently being a little too industrious in her support of the rights of homeless people. You don't want to go too far with these things or it might, you know, annoy the fundraisers. We have an incoming call on the air.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Good evening, Bathroom Spear.
Good evening.
This is Shaw's Mr. Fidget.
Yes.
Wanted to give you a call and give you my little update as I run around and share it with the community through your Marf Avenue of Free Radio. My case management conference for my whole mess with the Canfields is coming up Tuesday at 8 o'clock there at the courthouse, and they're going to, for the first time, have each side of the lawyer sit down, and I've been actively pursuing, making these people accountable for their actions in regard to me, and hopefully...
Hang on a second, Shaza. Let's tell the audience, we were actually talking about the sleeping ban when you called in, and I know you have a strong interest in that issue as well.
Indeed, I was about to go there.
About to go to the sleeping ban.
Indeed, I was.
Why don't you first talk about the ban, if I can kind of direct you,
and then
we will return to your Tuesday 8 a.m. Management conference around the assault you suffered at the beach boardwalk about a year ago.
You bet. Yeah. I was going to say I spoke to the new mayor elect. It's Catherine, right?
Catherine Byers.
Catherine Byers a couple days ago, and I expressed to her that I felt that the sleeping ban was definitely a bad thing for people, and suggested that it go on the agenda, and she told me that it wouldn't be going on the agenda, and. As she was going away there, and I was showing her details of my case, actually, and I just filed my complaint with the CPRB yesterday about this whole mess, and as she was going away, she did reassure me, as I said, well, at the very least, you should let the police or instruct them to make it a low priority, and she did say that they intended to do that, or gave me a nod, and that was about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not quite pleased with that.
That's the update on the sleeping ban.
Yeah, that was yesterday. That's what she told me.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, yeah, we I talked to her yesterday, too, and then she called in and said she was going to do, as you say, something similar, making it the lowest priority, and Keith Sugar reaffirmed that when we talked to him last night on KZSC, and we're going to play that tape segment shortly. But let's briefly talk about your case at 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. I guess that'll be the December 8th. You go to your case in the morning, then you bring your sleeping bag and your blanket in the evening for the city council.
A full day.
What court is it in?
It's not actually the case. This is the case management conference where the two lawyers sit down and, or, you know, the sides sit down and talk about what they're going
to
do.
Is it open to the public?
I'm really not sure if it's open to the public. I'll find out and let you know. What I do know is that, you know, I guess lawyers always have a way of looking at either side of it, but considering the fact that they charged me and it took 6 months for those charges to go to the DA, and then in between that time, you know, my whole situation broke out in the national media of sorts, and I wasn't able to have an accountable thing, I think that they're going to have a hard time defending it because of the public pressure. property.
Yeah, let me interrupt briefly to explain that you are a individual who has devised a kind of a radically new kind of worry toy, the fidget, which many people may be aware of. It's a sort of a mechanical device made up of bicycle parts,
mm-hmm.
which you can use to get true peace of mind without 20 years of Zen.
Well, or at the very least, because you know, if somebody tries one and doesn't get true peace of mind, I'd hate to have false advertising. But I would say that it would give them something to occupy their mind when other circumstances were out of their control.
Indeed.
And that's really why I've been able to make a living with them for 7 years.
Certainly, it's peace of metal, if not peace of mind. No question about it.
Well, but the metal was at some point mind.
And this,
yeah.
Indeed. Well, that's deeper philosophy. However, I know that we've kind of been through your case, but it's been a while since we've talked about it. I'm going to briefly summarize it, that you were...
Well,
you were at the beach boardwalk with your bicycle, and you saw a strange sign that you wanted some clarification on, which in essence said something to the effect that bicycles and skateboarders have to essentially surrender their property to the beach boardwalk. If the beach boardwalk tells them to leave, they have to leave their property there in the care of the beach boardwalk, or they will be given trespass orders for a year or something to that effect?
That's 75% accurate. In 10 seconds or less, the sign says verbatim, no bikes, skateboards, rollerblades permitted on boardwalk property or sidewalk will be confiscated by Seaside Company up to 72 hours.
Up to 72 hours. So in other words, it didn't just say, you can't rollerblade here, we're going to call the cops. It said, we are going to confiscate your property, which indeed sounds
even,
a little...
Even worse than that, it didn't say you cannot ride these objects. It said, these devices are not permitted. It didn't indicate anything about use. The sign itself is a non sequitur of sorts.
So you had some legitimate questions. You presented them to the guards, the beach boardwalk goon squad, as I call it. And in the course of your rather innocent inquiries, apparently one of the officers took offense, got into an angry argument with you, demanded you leave. You then retorted, "All right, you would, but wanted to get your property." The exchange became more heated. He threw you to the ground, dragged you off, in essence had you... Now, were you actually arrested and taken into custody and held in jail?
Yeah, they put me into the station, too, there. I mean, and the whole thing occurred in 45 to seconds to a minute and a half. You know, the guard had answered my question. I turned back to him and repeated the answer. And while I was doing that, the other guard, I think, misunderstood and thought that guard was telling me I was trespassing, when indeed he was actually informing me about the policy that they give trespass warnings to people who had their bicycles ridden there.
In any case, this intrusion on your life produced such a disruption that
wow.
you lost thousands of dollars because you were setting up this fidget business with the help of, you already had thousands of inquiries.
We had about $25,000 invested in development of the business, and it happened 3 days before my first jury dart show after 6 years of in-person development and 60,000 units out the door. So yeah, it was pretty traumatic for me, but the real key is I just want to see them change their policy. I made them over a period of months. Now, anybody who's familiar with the boardwalk, in front of the casino entrance door, there's two colors of cement, purple cement and red cement. The red cement is closer to the railroad tracks, the purple cement is closer to the building. The purple cement is Seaside Company property, but the red cement is city property since 1993 when Mr. Canfield signed it over to the city in exchange for a sidewalk improvement program. And where that goes is that I was on the red cement when they issued the ticket, and they told me I was trespassing, and then the next day I got them on tape telling me that I could not go anywhere on that side of the tracks from the corner of the Coconut Grove building, but in reality, that was public property.
So they were
on tape lying to me, and then when I went
So they were trying to intimidate you from your proper use of public spaces.
The guards didn't know that they were lying because they were told by their superiors that was private property, but the superiors had given it to the city. So now that I have the title deed and there were four witnesses, and one thing, let me touch on the CPRB, the complaint. My biggest problem
the
is...
The CPRB, of course, is the Citizens Police Review Board.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The day after the assault, I went to them and, I went to the police and I filed countercharges for assault and battery. And when I filed those countercharges, the officer took my statement and the name and number of the witnesses, but he didn't actually type up the report that was added to the case until August 8th, and I was in there and gave the report June 25th. The first thing that hit paper from him was August 8th, and that was about 6 days after Chief Belcher checked out the case and looked at it. Then he made up his report and minimized all of my injuries and stripped the witnesses off of there. Now you'd think, well, then they'd send it to the DA. Well, they didn't do that in August. They didn't do that in September, or in October, or in November, or not even really in December, because it was December 31st that the DA finally got this case and chose to no-file the case against me. So in the interim, I got famous on that Art Bell program on 400 radio stations with 20 million listeners. I got absolutely buried in mail within 30 days of the assault, and the pressure and the bill had come from my partner because we weren't making money at those events because my arm was in a sling and my voice was gone.
So you had indeed obligations to return fidgets to people. You weren't able to make them to meet those obligations, and you are trying to get some kind of damage and redress for this injury to your career, your livelihood, and your reputation.
Exactly. There's thousands of people right now waiting for their fidgets and waiting to know what happened to me. I have letters from Strange Universe, the television program. I have people from Ball Aerospace and Boeing and Toyota, and letters from literally all over the country, all 50 states and Canada and Puerto Rico.
I've seen your packet of letters. Quite an impressive packet. Let me interrupt though to say that maybe what you can do is give us more of an update on Sunday when you'll know how public this Tuesday hearing that you have coming up is.
That would be great. Yeah.
And we can.
The reason I wanted to get this out is because it's damaging for them. And if anybody with an open mind, and I mean I don't know how their lawyers are going to defend this with the facts, but anybody with an open mind that looks at this would be appalled and shocked. And I will definitely check back with you Sunday, and I apologize for switching topic or horsing midstream.
No, that's
but
fine.
I wanted to get the information out there, because now that these complaints have been filed, for instance, yesterday I filed the complaint against Chief Belcher because he had his hands on the report before that was added. As I just said, today he was in Starbucks at the same time I went in there, and I repelled him like a magnet. I went into Starbucks and got my cup of coffee, and as soon as he saw me walk past him and towards the counter, him and whoever he was talking to got up and left. And in the middle of
you're not popular. You're not popular with the police chief anymore, Shaz. This could be a crushing blow for
you. Yeah, I have the facts on that, and I just wish that back about 60 days ago when I had called him up and spoken to him or went to his office and talked to him on tape and went to the CPRB, I just made an inquiry. I wasn't going to make a complaint. I simply wanted them to apologize for the mistakes that were made. He wasn't willing to do that. He told Gary Amani that nothing improper had happened, and I don't know how I possibly could have thought that considering the facts of this.
Now, Shaz, nothing improper ever does happen in the Santa Cruz Police Department. Have you been following? Happy John Dine keeled over dead because of he was a suicidal guy.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the truth? Well, I'll tell one thing to this community is mm-hmm. that, you know, I have had a really hard year and a half, and I really love the people of Santa Cruz, but the legislative and bureaucratic regulations around here really are screwed, especially the sleeping ban, and I think that there's more people that are against it than that are for it, but the problem is the people that are for it have the money and the connections. It's no secret. It was in the Sentinel yesterday. This is the most expensive place to live in the country, and you gotta keep your yard clean, or if these riffraff get in here, they'll goof up our nest, and that's really what's going on in this town on the higher levels, except for, I believe now, this new city council, and I really hope that the scenic beauty and the wonderful town that this is can be recaptured by the people, because I was here before the earthquake, back in 1987, and I really enjoyed it, and I hope it gets back to that.
And we really enjoy you, Shaz. Call us back on Sunday.
Thank you, Robert. Have a great night, and God bless.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And that was the inimitable Shaz, the fidget man on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Shaz. And we've been able to slow him down using all of our soothing skills. Has been co-host on this show. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our lines are open at 427-3772. A couple of comments about what Shaz said. Boy, he said so much I don't know what to comment on, but... just a couple of comments about what's upcoming. We have in the studio with us Becky Johnson, who's just arrived. She has been doing some researching into shelter issues, and she and I also had a kind of a disagreement about how optimistic to be about the new city council. Perhaps the thing to do before Becky and I get into it, or maybe we should get into it first, I'm not quite sure what the order should be, is play this last night taped segment from Crone and Sugar on KZSC so people can get a sense of what the latest chit-chat is around the sleeping ban debate. That's not quite the latest. I talked to Sugar this morning about that. He's one of our council members. The council, for those who are unaware of this, is divided 4-3, progressive versus reactionary, though the reactionaries call themselves progressives. Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez all got endorsed by different progressive organizations, kind of a little camouflage activity there, or possibly some changing in midstream, more camouflage, I'd say, or perhaps bad judgment by mainline progressive organizations. In any case, the issue of the sleeping ban is one that is very pressing for a lot of us. You've heard me talk about it in great detail on this station. I've begun soliciting signatures and protest participation downtown. I'll be downtown at 1 o'clock tomorrow in front of New Leaf or in front of Blockbuster Video if it's raining. Also check Crown Books, the former Crown Books down near the Cinema 9, which has an overhang where you can kind of sit around at a table in the rain. In order to get the word out to the citizenry that what we need is we need people to come to City Council meeting on December 8th, Tuesday, at 7 o'clock with a blanket and a sleeping bag and a determination to make a significant protest there if there is not a real change in the law on that date. You're going to hear lots of people tell you it's too soon, they can't do it, they're new in office, let them get their feet wet. Well, there's a lot more that's going to get wet than people's feet if there's a ban on sleeping in blankets throughout the winter. It's outrageous that there could such a thing be considered. If this were, you know, some other country and we were reading about it, we would consider this the height of barbarism. Instead, of course, it's Santa Cruz and business as usual. And it's just completely unacceptable that this ban should continue through the winter, particularly since the people who are elected to this city council were endorsed by organizations that endorsed ending the blanket and sleeping bans, the law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in your vehicle or outside, and on most private property, except for a fenced inside yard or backyard or three vehicles to a church property. Now, my producer is telling me we should talk about shelter first. Well, let's yield to that particular perspective. Why don't you pull up a chair there? In the studio with me, as I've said before, is activist Becky Johnson. She's a writer for Street Spirit. She's done a lot of inquiring into shelter issues. She was for 2 years on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board before she was unceremoniously bounced off the board for being out of favor with Day Center Duchess Karen Gillette. And here she is in the studio. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, one of the things that concerns me about this whole sleeping ban debate, and that is this kind of like, if there is not sufficient shelter, then the sleeping ban is completely wrong. And the word if bothers me. We know that there is not sufficient shelter. You know, if the number is 500 to 1,500 homeless in the city of Santa Cruz alone, and shelter spaces being probably about 180 or 190 spaces in the ISSP program each night. Obviously, those numbers don't match up. But this little shell game that has been played with the previous council, and I'm very anxious if the current council starts singing the same tune, is that, we had some spaces left over in the ISSP. The armory wasn't completely full. Therefore, we have sufficient shelter. And this is a concern, because obviously, if all the people who are sleeping in their vehicles, those who are sleeping, have little campsites out in the Poganip, or maybe they've curled up under someone's house with or without their permission, If all those people were somehow rousted out of those places and showed up at the ISSP program, it would be overwhelmed. Now, there are some other shelter programs, such as River Street Shelter. There's Families in Transition.
New Life
Center. New Life Center. And also...
they're full and they have waiting lists, right?
And the Shelter Project, too, which gives vouchers to people in area motels. All of those programs are full and have waiting lists for them. The only program that has any room at all on an emergency basis is the ISSP, and that's a combination of sleeping in the area churches and up in the National Guard Armory. Now, part of the debate about the armory is how many people can the armory actually hold? Now, you perhaps heard Mike Rotkin previously and saying that the armory could hold 200 people. However, it's never held 200 people.
Well,
Well, how many people can you fit into a phone booth there, Becky?
Obviously, if you stuff and cram, you can fit more people in than if you have them under what would be called humane conditions. But the maximum that I've ever heard of the armory holding was 132 people. Another thing that concerned me is that I've heard two separate reports about how many people were housed at the armory. That should be a static number and not in dispute. When I talked to one of the directors, she indicated that there were 106 people in the armory. And then when I talked to a homeless man who had spent the night in the armory that same night, he said there were 120. That causes me some concern.
How would he know? Did he count them?
He said that the people who were up there went and did their own head count, and he overheard them saying that there were 120 people in.
Do you consider that crowded?
He said it was pretty crowded. Mm-hmm. And most reports I've had is that it can comfortably hold 100 people. And when it gets past 100, it starts getting pretty tight. And at 132, it was extremely crowded.
Now, we're not talking about beds, right? And also the armor. We're talking about places on the floor. And I guess another person we talked to, Steve Argue, the man who was assaulted for selling a paper, not the fellow we heard at the beginning of the hour, Frank Ross, but another man who was dragged off to jail for 3 days, and then suddenly charges all dropped. And he has his own show here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, earlier today he did his show, and he's having a demonstration on the 12th of December. But in fact, he said that the armory had lice in the blankets, and that he didn't use it anymore because of that reason.
Yeah, and then the worker said, oh no, they're potato bugs, which he disputed.
Well, maybe that's helpful because the armory doesn't serve any meals like the ISSB, that maybe they're expecting people to find their own food, you know.
Well, yeah, we did have that one report of lice, and of course that strikes a lot of fear in both people who are staying in the armory and also the people they're providing, because it's a huge problem if they do have lice. And they have had problems with that in the past.
I mean, when I was homeless, and that's happened frequently at different times, usually I'm in much better shape. I have a vehicle, I'm living in my car, I'm traveling. When I worked in Santa Barbara as a homeless advocate, I was homeless for a number of years.